The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
That's a fly ball. Beat the left. Back. That's it. Hey. He did it. Ernie Banks got number 500. A line drive shot into the seats and left. The ball tossed to the bullpen. Everybody on your feet. This is it. Whee!
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by First American Bank, the largest privately held bank in Illinois. We do more for your money.
So you got to picture this, Danny Parkins. In the early 1970s, everybody's school lets out at 3 o'clock and everybody runs home to put on Channel 9 and see what's going on in the Cubs game. And on that particular May afternoon, we got a chance to see Mr. Cobb, Ernie Banks, hit 500 off of Pat Jarvis of the Atlanta Braves. And there was Jack Brickhouse on the call right there.
A glorious day.
Oh, man. This is going to be a treat. If you were a kid growing up in the 70s and you wanted to be a sports writer or a sports broadcaster, there were a lot of great role models out there. A lot of great sports writers in this city's history. John Shulian and David Israel, Ray Sons, and this guy, Ron Rappaport from the Sun-Times, who joins us in studio to talk about his brand new book, Let's Play 2, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks. Thank you for stopping by, Rap.
Thanks for having me in. You know, I've been in the other studio listening to you guys. You have too much fun.
Yeah, we have a good time.
Do they pay you for this? I mean,
it's for some reason. Don't tell anybody, Rap.
Yeah, it's fun. I've been laughing.
Yeah, well, the sky is falling. The sky's falling. We're four games into a baseball season.
Well, I was in Texas. Did you know that Ernie was born and raised in Texas?
I did. He was Dallas,
yes. A lot of people in Dallas don't even know that. And I was there for the opening series. Who knew that the Cubs would open there? So I went to that game on Saturday, 50,000 screaming fans, at least half of them wearing Cubs uniforms or Cubs jerseys, Cubs jackets, heavy stuff. And here's Darvish. He gets a 3-run lead in the first inning. Well, this is going to be easy. He lasted like two more innings. Yeah. What's this all about?
That was it. Yeah, tough start for Darvish. There's a lot of ways we could describe Ernie Banks. If someone were to ask you, throw some adjectives out there. How do you describe what type of guy Ernie Banks was?
First adjective would be misunderstood. There's one way of looking at it without exaggerating too much, is that the happy, smiling, optimistic, Cubs are going to win the pennant, it's a beautiful day for a ballgame, was a mask that he wore to keep us from getting to know the real Ernie Banks. Now, that's overstating it a little bit, because that happy, sunny outlook was real. It was honest. But beneath that, there was a real guy living a real life with real problems, real complexities, real bouts of melancholy, real loneliness towards the end of his years, end of his life. Ernie was a guy living a real life just like all of us are. He was just so good at deflecting it, at putting it aside. How are you? Well, how's your wife? Asking 8-year-old kids. Are you married? You'd come up and talk to Ernie, maybe it'd be the first time, and you'd be really excited. I'm meeting my hero. I'm meeting my childhood hero. What a thrill to talk to Ernie Banks. I was so excited. But you know what? All we talked about was me. That was what Ernie did. He kept this mask on to keep the outside world outside. And that's the Ernie that I'm trying to come to terms with in Let's Play 2.
What was behind his sadness?
His problem was that the thing you have to understand about Ernie, that his whole life was avoiding conflict, avoiding drama, running away from it as fast as he could all of his life. It started in his early days in Dallas. He would run with some of the boys, and they'd get in trouble, and they'd turn around, and he'd be gone. His nickname in high school was Casper the Ghost. And it was that way throughout his life. If you understand that one fact, then you understand Ernie. I talked to his older sister, Edna. She's 90. Ernie was the second of 12 kids. Edna was the first. She's 90 years old, and she told me stories about how she couldn't get him to engage. He was always the quiet guy. He was the one who sat and just watched and listened. And Edna's this voluble, wonderful person. He goes through this the rest of his life. His sons I talked to, Jerry and Joey, the twin sons, they live out in California where I live. And they were very honest with me about the pleasures and the problems of growing up to be Ernie Banks' son. And they would say that their mother would go nuts because Ernie wouldn't engage. He wouldn't get involved. When the kids got in trouble, not in trouble, but when the kids were kids, rambunctious young kids at home, when there was shouting and yelling and don't do this and don't do that, Ernie would get in the car and drive away. Take it another step further. Doug Harvey, remember the umpire they called God? I talked to him before he died. He said, tell me about Ernie. He said, here's the one thing you have to know. He never argued a pitch. I said, wait a minute. He never, in all the times, all the hundreds of games, more than that, he never turned around and looked back at the umpire. Can you imagine? As if to say, how could you call that pitch? Take it another step further. Leo DeRocher treats him like crap. I mean, poisonous, their relationship. Much worse than we ever knew. He never confronted Leo. Till the day Ernie died, he never said a bad word about Leo in public. He said plenty in private. Take it another step. Hank Aaron calls him up. Hank is very politically involved. It's the 60s now, right? Civil rights is heating up. There are protests. There are marches. There's push for legislation. And Hank calls Ernie, and Hank calls Willie Mays. And he says, you guys got to speak up. I can't do it all here from Milwaukee. Ernie wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. That was his whole life, at avoiding trouble, avoiding conflict. And here's what Jerry, his son, told me. If you spend your whole life avoiding and living up to this caricature, eventually you become a prisoner of it. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what happened to Ernie.
Ron Rappaport, legendary Sun-Times columnist, is our guest in studio. His book on Ernie Banks, available now wherever books are sold. Let's Play 2. So avoiding conflict and sadness and melancholy, how much of that was childhood or how much of that was developed after he became the legend of Ernie Banks?
Started in childhood. What you have to understand is that Ernie grew up in North Dallas, totally segregated, very poor. He missed an entire year of school helping his dad go out and pick cotton. Anything could have happened. I talked to five of his high school classmates, and they were worried about him because they thought maybe he would disappear and not come back. But the neighborhood was totally segregated. I don't believe Ernie had a meaningful conversation with a white person until he went into the Army. Now he's in the Army.
And Korean War, right?
Korean War, but lucky him, he went to Germany.
Okay.
Some of his high school classmates went to Korea, mm-hmm. where they were patrolling, you know, in trouble, in combat. Now he comes back to the Kansas City Monarchs. He's playing for Buck O'Neill. Totally black surroundings. The players eat together. They sleep together. You know, sleep in the same, stay in the same hotels. Travel together. Hang out after ball games together. Now he comes to Chicago, and it's just him and Gene Baker, the wonderful infielder who they brought up so that Ernie wouldn't be alone. So now he's in a different situation. He's in an integrated situation. After the games, the white players go north. He and Gene go to Southside where they stay. And Ernie has great difficulty adjusting to this. All of a sudden, he's in an integrated situation. So that caused him problems. So what started as non-confrontational in Dallas kind of went on and on and on throughout his life.
The Cubs late in Ernie's life pulled back on his accessibility, didn't they? Ernie would do public appearances and not always in the franchise's mind represent them appropriately. He had a penchant for drinking, maybe more than he should have. This is pot calling the kettle black rap. He couldn't keep his hands to himself on occasion. And he had a habit I didn't know of until Let's Play 2 of kleptomania.
People would come up to him and with this wonderful autographed picture. You know, I got this wonderful picture for him to autograph. And maybe it was a picture Ernie hadn't seen before. And soon Ernie would just take the picture. It was his now. And the person would go to whoever from the Cubs was there and say, I didn't mean for him to take it. I hoped he'd sign it and give it back to me. And the Cubs official would say, it's Ernie Banks. What could I say? There are four or five aspects of this that I cite in the book. My favorite, and there were many more that had happened. My favorite is somebody came up with a bottle of, somebody had bottled Ernie Banks wine or 511 wine. Or his number of home runs, mm-hmm. right? And Ernie, you know, I figured maybe he'd autograph it. Well, he puts the wine under his coat and walks off with it. And the woman who told me the story said, you know, I had this picture of Ernie in a hotel stairway somewhere, mm-hmm. drunk on this bottle of wine. I hope he at least enjoyed it. His big problem with the Cubs being a representative was he didn't show up. He'd say that he'd come and he wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. And that's what led to Dallas Green, remember, quote, firing him.
Yeah.
In fairness, when the Ricketts family bought the Cubs from the Tribune, that changed. Now, Ernie was much older then. He was much more amenable to being managed and handled. And Tom Ricketts took good care of him. He put him on the payroll. He paid for his lodging in his room in Trump Tower, his apartment in Trump Tower. He assigned him to do nothing more strenuous than sit in suites and jolly up the fans. Mm-hmm. He paid for his entire funeral, brought in the whole family, you know, that kind of thing. So by then, the Cubs and Ernie had reconciled whatever their problems had been in the past.
And so it ended well from both sides. Really, Ernie was happy with his relationship with the Cubs at the end?
It really did. It really did. You know, this is one of the things Tom Ricketts did is he told me there were two women who used to sit in the boxes with him at Wrigley Field towards the end of his life. And I think they were there the final day he ever went to Wrigley Field. So I found them. Now, Ernie had descended into dementia the last 6 months of his life. He'd call his son and Jerry in California and say, "What's your phone number?" And Jerry would say, "Dad, you're calling me on my phone." Mm-hmm. He'd call Regina Rice, his friend and caretaker, who took care of him at the end, and say, how do you use the microwave to heat up this coffee? Well, he knew how to. She'd sit there, listen to him on the phone, pushing the buttons. Mm-hmm. People would see him on the street. But there, you know, and he was kind of in a fog. But there was one place he could go and be happy and be Ernie at the end of his life, last few months, and that was Wrigley Field.
Mm-hmm.
He'd sit in these boxes, and he'd drink Mai Tais, and he'd watch the games, and he'd talk to the fans and go on and be real happy. And one of the women's name is Donna Wakefield. I'm going to see her here. She's going to come to one or two of my appearances here that I'm making on behalf of the book. And she said, "Listen, I'm a speech pathologist. I know dementia when I see it, and Ernie didn't have it at Wrigley Field." And that's kind of the picture I want to take. Because he had trouble towards the end of his life. He's got dementia. He's lost a lot of weight. He's failing physically. His fourth wife, who he split from, all of his four marriages ended terribly, just brutal fights, is back in California. His sons and daughter are back in California. He's kind of by himself. Fergie and Billy and Randy would come visit once in a while. He had some friends, a guy named John Rogers, who was an old pal of Barack Obama's, who he knew, who's a head of Aerial Investments, was a good friend. Grantha Porter at Harry Carey's was a good friend to Ernie. Bradley Baroiak, the general manager of the Wrigley Building, was a good friend to Ernie's. But Ernie kind of, in a way, walked the streets. He didn't really have much. Tom Bongiorno, his next-door neighbor, who runs Bongiorno's restaurant, next door to Trump Tower. He was a good friend to Ernie. But he was kind of adrift. Regina Rice took good care of him. Everybody told me that she took really good care of Ernie. Handled his schedule, was very patient with him with his doctor's appointments, took him. So he had these friends, but he didn't have any family. And so his last months were kind of sad.
Did he wind up reconciling with the family members with whom he'd been estranged for so many years?
No. His sons and he had an off and on relationship. They would call, they would check in on him. They were both good. They're both good guys, you know, good people in California, living good lives. Mm-hmm. And they revere their dad. They really do. And yet he could frustrate them. You know, he cut them out of his will. And the wording was for reasons best known to them. And Joey said to me, he didn't say that. Those are the words of some lawyer. But, you know, he was very much estranged from his family.
Ron Rappaport, legendary Sun-Times sports writer, has written a book, Let's Play 2, Things You Might Not Know About Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks. And I was approaching my 8th birthday in the summer of 69 when the Cubs ripped my heart out of my chest, Rap. And what I remember is a team that was running out of gas offensively. Later, when I get into this line of work, I would read a lot about it and talk to a lot of people and learn some more things. What I didn't know until I picked up your book was how much the Mets were laughing at the Cubs in August and September. The original trash talking, I guess, in baseball. They were all over the boys who they called old men. In fact, I think that's the name of your chapter, These Old Men.
You're a
bunch of old men, yeah.
Here's a funny thing. Since the book has come out, even before, we've been having a lot of presence on Facebook. So all of a sudden, a familiar name pops up, making a comment on Facebook, Ron Swoboda.
Uh-huh.
He was there today. He was commenting today. This is what he told me. The name of the book is Let's Play 2. So he's reacting to that. He says, "I heard Ernie say, Let's Play 2 before every game of every series we ever played against them, except the last two games at Wrigley Field. What people tend to forget is that after the Mets clinched the title and the fans were furious, the last two games at Wrigley Field that season were against the Mets. And they come to town. And the fans don't know whether they're angry at the Mets or at the Cubs. I mean, they're furious. They're returning Ken Holtzman's autograph, writing a letter to Ron Santo saying, "I wish you died in that plane crash, a private plane in Indiana."
Oh.
I mean, it was rough. And after the game, they stormed the field, tearing the place apart. The organist is playing "Happy Days Are Here Again," and the Mets are just laughing at him. Do you want to know why they lost that pennant that year? Two words: Leo DeRocher. I'm convinced that if anybody else had been managing that team, listen, he ran that team into the ground. Ernie is 38 years old. He's playing in his first meaningful chance to get to the World Series. He played in 155 ball games. Randy Hundley caught both ends of 9 doubleheaders. Don Kessinger, who hit 300 the first half of the season, faded. Ferguson Jenkins started 42 games. It's the most since Iron Man McGinty. Phil Regan pitched in out of the bullpen.
The Vulture.
In 7 games in a row. Finally, he's going, which was a one short of the record. So he's waiting to go on the record. Fergie, bless his heart, pitched a complete game. And Regan went and shook his hands and said, "I'm glad I didn't get that record." Here's the ultimate judgment on DeRocher. Remember J.C. Martin?
Sure.
He was a backup catcher for the 69 Mets.
Also played for the Sox.
He's from Chicago. He's from Chicago. And they trade him to the Cubs the next year, 1970. He goes, "Hey, great. I'm going home. This is going to be great. Good team. You know, could have won last year." So he shows up with his Mets bag and his Mets World Series ring into the clubhouse at Wrigley Field. And they say, "You might want to hide that." You know. Anyway, he figures he's got a shot. 2 weeks of watching Leo manage the team, he knows there's no chance. He's got everybody uptight. It's like every game is the last game of the World Series. He said there was no chance. And then he said these words: "If Gil Hodges had been managing the Cubs instead of the Mets in 69, the Cubs would have won it."
Hot summer, too. And they no lights. Do you think that had something to do with it?
People talk about that, all the doubleheaders, but the Mets played 23 doubleheaders because of rainouts and things. You know, there are 3 chapters in the book. I couldn't get enough of the 69 season. The first chapter is the Cubs, and how thrilling and how exciting. 10 games ahead, people were going crazy. The players were telling me stuff like they couldn't drive home. The fans were waiting after the game. They knew their routes, and they'd stop them at stoplights and make them roll down the windows and sign. Al Spangler, remember him? Jose does that Al Spangler banner. He was telling me that they'd walk out of the locker room and walk to the parking lot and go to the fans, "Hey, there comes Santo, there comes Banks," and nobody knew what Al Spangler looked like. And they'd all run and he'd get in the car and drive away. I mean, it was madness. It was wonderful. Now, the second chapter is from the point of view of the Mets. And you're right. It's basically about every series that the Cubs played against the Mets that year. And every series, Mets get more confident and more confident and more confident until finally Don Young drops the ball. There's the black cat, all the things that we remember. Randy Hundley talking about the play at the plate, trying to AG sliding under his glove. If Randy were here now, we'd tell you, he was out. He was out. Tommy Agee admitted to me he was out, you know. And then the final series at Wrigley Field. This is classic Ernie. One of the things I try to do in the book is recall what a truly great baseball player Ernie Banks was. 1955 to 1960, 6 seasons. He hits more home runs, drives in more runs than Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, Mickey Mantle, everybody else in baseball. All those guys go to multiple World Series. Mantle win every year, you know. But Aaron and Mays, in those 6 seasons, the Cubs finished 123 games out of first place. So it's the last day, the last game at Wrigley Field. And this scene that I described to you, the fans are screaming, they're surly, and the Mets are taunting them. You know, "You can't take it," Swoboda says. You know, "You can't take it." They're screaming and yelling and carrying on. Quietly, in this meaningless game, Ernie hits a homer, triple, drives in 3 runs. That gives him 106 RBIs for the season. 3rd in the National League that year. And the most ever to this day by a 38-year-old man. Babe Ruth had 103 when he was 38. Ty Cobb had 102 Willie Mays had 58. Nobody knew. Nobody cared. Nobody remembers that about this game.
Yeah.
That was Ernie. He was this great player. The fact that he was a great player tended to get lost in the midst. Want to hear one more story?
Please.
1959. He's going for his second straight MVP. Unheard of. Unprecedented. You know, amazing. Unprecedented for anybody to win back-to-back MVPs on a terrible team. And, of course, the town is on fire in 1959 with baseball fever for the White Sox.
Yeah.
They're going to the World Series for the first time since they were the Black Sox. Ernie, late in September, hits his 42nd home run of this magnificent season before 598 fans at Wrigley Field. Not 5,000. 500. Poor Ernie. He's playing a different game by a different set of rules, which is why even today, when they talk about the great hitters of the 50s, Roberto Clemente, Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, Mickey Mantle, Ernie's name sometimes gets lost, gets left out of the conversation.
It does. You're right.
You seem to have an affection for the subject that you covered, and you worked with him on the book. It was going to be an As Told To autobiography, right, before he died? So how did that come about?
We were both living in California, and I convinced him. I thought, Ernie, we got to dig a little deeper. Let's cut through. We both know from the time we've sat and talked to each other that there's a real guy there. He got into it. Talking about Dallas, talking about the Negro Leagues, talking about the adjustment coming to Chicago, talking about his nice relationship with Philip Wrigley, talking about Leo and his not-so-nice relationship, talking about his problems later in life, and then he pulled the plug. I mean, it broke my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in this business a long time. That was the biggest disappointment I ever had. So now he dies, and I go back and read the transcripts, and I started crying all over again. And I said, well, let's just hit the road and see what we can find out about this guy.
He pulled the plug, though?
He just decided he didn't want to do it for whatever reason. He told me that his wife didn't want him to do it. I called Liz. She's the only person that wouldn't talk to me for the book. But we did have a little conversation after he died.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, and he didn't want to do a book. He just liked the idea of a book. There may be something to that. Ernie had, today they would call it ADD. He didn't finish projects. Like he didn't show up for events, that kind of a thing. So here's the question I asked myself. Were people, as I hit the road and started talking to these 100 and more people, would people want to talk to me about it? Or would they kind of think, no, Ernie was a private guy? On the contrary. Not only did they tell me everything they knew about Ernie and how frustrating he could be, how much they loved him, but how much they didn't understand him, but they told me about other people who I'd never heard of. That's how I got in touch with Donna and Sue, who were there that last game. That's how I got in touch with Tom Bongiorno, a couple of other people who knew him late in life. They were, it seemed to me, as frustrated with the fact that Ernie had successfully hidden the real person underneath the mask as I was. And that's what helped me do this book.
Well, good luck with the project wrapping. It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for being generous with your time. Again, the name of the book is Let's Play 2, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks by Ron Rappaport, longtime Sun-Times scribe, and a member of the Sports Writers as well. Longstanding show on television.
Can I give a plug for where
radio.
I'm going to be appearing?
Absolutely. Please.
Tonight, I'm going to be at the Frugal Muse in Derry, and Rich Nye is going to be there, Ernie's old teammate.
Okay.
Tomorrow at noon, I'm going to be at the University Club on Randolph Street with Phil Rosenthal of the Tribune. Thursday at 7, I'm going to be at the Barnes & Noble in Old Orchard. I hope people will come out and see me. It'll be great to see them.
Rich Nye, the former Cubs relief pitcher, I believe, was a veterinarian after his big league career.
He works with birds, and I got to tell you,
I called around
to a lot of the old – all the old ballplayers. I think I quote Rich as much as any of them.
Okay.
Because he had a lot to say. He's very analytical about what happened in 69 and about Ernie hiding his true nature and a lot of other things. We're going to have a lot of fun. Frugal Muse and Darien, 7 o'clock.
Great. Rap, great stuff. Thank you for your time.
Thanks
Good
for having
luck,
me on,
man.
Guys. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you very much. That's Ron Rappaport, Old Sun Times columnist. His book, Let's Play 2, The Ernie Banks Story. It's available now wherever books are sold. Matt got something absolutely right with news of the day. We'll get into it coming up on The Score.
Edited, family managed. And that means legacy. That means dependability. That means using Grainger. With over 1.5 million products and knowledgeable product experts, Grainger has whatever we need. And with same-day pickup and next-day delivery options, they have it whenever we need it. For over 90 years, businesses like ours have trusted Grainger. Because, like family, Grainger's got our back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Spilled your red, red wine? Quick, the quicker picker-upper. Bounty picks up spills and messes quicker. And is 2 times more absorbent than the leading ordinary brand. So you can get back on track quicker. Bounty, the quicker picker-upper.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Previous segment brought to you by the Timeshare Exit Team. If your goal is to get out of your timeshare this year, Timeshare Exit Team has your plan. They'll get you out legally and permanently. Call 844-915-EXIT, 844-915-EXIT, or visit timeshareexitteam.com. Bottom of the hour on The Score brought to you by Northwestern Football. Spring football is underway. Join Coach Fitz and the Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. As a child of that time, and I know you were more of a Billy Williams guy, but did you enjoy the old stories about Mr. Cub?
I did. The book's been enjoyable. You don't always want to go back to your childhood and relive the nightmares. This is a sports nightmare, but a nightmare nonetheless.
Sure.
I mean, when you're an 8-year-old and you get crushed,
It seems like the biggest nightmare you'll ever have.
Sure did at the time.
Yeah.
And just being reminded of it the last few days while plowing through Ron Rappaport's new book, Let's Play too, illuminated some things. I had no idea the Mets were happy to come downtown and verbally pee all over our boys.
Yeah.
Trash-talking subject
as old as time.
Cleon Jones, shut your mouth! Bud Harrelson, back in your cage. Anyway, fascinating stories.
Yeah, people can read it. I haven't got through a ton of the book, but was skipping around based on the glossary of things that I was interested in, and people think, oh, he was a Cub for life. 2 seasons in the Negro Leagues for
yes.
the Kansas City Monarchs with a stint serving his country in between. Fascinating period in his life.
Sports regrets for me include not seeing good Banks. I saw what was left of Ernie Banks in the late 1960s. He came in the league in 55. So
53.
By the time I get around to watching Banks, he's 37, 38 years old, and he's a first baseman.
Most RBI ever for a 38-year-old,
right. Yeah. Never saw shortstop Banks. Never saw Bobby Hull as an electric player when he was in the 50s and 60s with the Blackhawks. Williams a little bit younger than Banks and was here just a little bit longer than Ernie was. But, yeah, I mean, Ernie Banks was Chicago baseball, and anybody who's met Ernie, I've not found anybody yet who doesn't say – anything other than he was very cordial. He smiled. He signed an autograph. He was happy to take a picture. And maybe take one of your pictures, as we learned from Rappaport. That's odd. That's something the Cubs can't excuse. And they did. I mean, that's
a little kleptomania.
Yeah. He just, a fan shows up in an appearance and says, well, here's a picture I have of you and Glenn Becker, just for throw a name out there. And Ernie likes the picture, so it then becomes his.
Yes.
That's not right.
I get the same
thing. The Cubs should not have allowed that.
Well, how about just asking for the picture back? You're the fan, you hand him a picture to sign, and he just, folds it up and puts it in his pocket?
Yeah, he just puts it away. That's mine now.
I think you got to ask for it back in that situation.
Yeah.
It's an incredible power move, though.
Like, yes.
Are you going to be the one that steps up to Mr. Cub and says, give me my damn picture back?
Evidently not.
14?
Evidently not.
It depended on how important it was to me. You hand something to somebody and ask them to sign it. Chances are pretty good if that's what you've chosen for them to sign and mean something to you.
Well, some people get a
napkin
signed.
You don't have to sign it. Just give it back to me, okay? I need that back. I'll forge your damn autograph, Mr. Cub.
Yeah, certainly a revelation of Mr. Cub I wasn't expecting to get today. I hadn't read that part of the book, but yeah, there you go. Ernie Banks stole things that he was supposed to be autographing.
The dementia discussion with Ernie, that kind of, I guess, it made me think back to when we came across him at Harry Carey's Christmas dinner that year, Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, and it just... like, it made a lot more sense of the state of Ernie at that point when he didn't recognize Mac.
He called me Dan Jiggets.
Hmm.
That's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah, he was adamant, that happens to you all
just
the time.
Like, oh, it's Dan Jiggins. Yeah. Like, he was adamant it was Dan Jiggins.
That's dementia.
It could have been the wine, too. He was a couple bottles in, I think, when we ran into him.
From what I know about dementia, I think confusing Mac and Jiggs, I mean, you know, two score guys named Dan, I think dementia's a lot deeper and worse than that. I think that could have been something else.
And I'm not sure if the stealing stuff was dementia or when that happened in his life. I didn't get the story, but yeah, you know. Well, could have been the booze.
Could have been the booze.
Certainly possible.
You can blame everything on dementia. That's dementia. I stole something that was important to you? Sorry, dementia.
It's like a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got something exactly right. I don't know if it played out how you thought it was, but have you followed the developments of the Alliance of American Football today?
Moment of silence for the AAF.
So this guy, Tom Dundon, invests in it, and he's a billionaire. He owns the Carolina Hurricanes, among other things. He owns Top Golf, among other things. So a very successful businessman has the appearance of pledging $250 million towards the league. Apparently, they only needed $20 million to fund the rest of this season, but Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback and NFL Reporter has reported that Thomas Dundon was only interested in some sort of proprietary startup gambling software that the AAF had trademarked, that they had the rights to for live betting and the legalization of gambling. And so he became the principal investor in the league just to get his hands on the gambling technology and software, whatever that may be. And then in his contract had the right to pull funding. And so he got the gambling stuff and then pulled funding, and now the league's done.
That's a weird story.
Weird story, right? And listen, I didn't watch a second of it. The only thing I liked.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't. I saw the highlights the first week, and what I said about the AAF when we talked about it week one was,
I remember you having, I don't remember what the thought was, but you wanted to run something by me.
The rules.
That's what it was.
Because they remember?
They were tinkering with rules. Yeah, let's see how this goes, and if the NFL likes it, maybe it considers following suit.
The eighth referee, the Sky Judge.
Yeah.
The no extra points, automatic go for two.
Right.
Right, go for it on fourth down instead of onside kicks. Like, they had all of these super weird, aggressive rules. So I was just like, this is fascinating. I don't care about any of these players or this league, but I want to see if these rules work, and maybe the NFL could steal something for it. It's gone immediately.
Yeah, well, I thought that was the nice thing the NFL could have done is, you know, have wield some influence and try some things and see how it feels when you have 22 guys doing something at full speed. See if that looks right to you and judge it over a long period of time. But season's over, huh?
Season is over.
Ship has sailed for the AAF. Who won the first and only year in the league's history?
Oh, they didn't get to the playoffs.
Five games into the season or something like
that? I think seven, and there was supposed to be a final four games like coming up on, and I think it was on CBS. The games upcoming were part of their CBS package.
Yeah, there's inventory now.
Well, because some of it was CBS Sports Network, some of it was NFL Network.
You should get a show.
Yeah, I should.
While they're scrambling for programming, you should call.
Call CBS.
Call them first thing tomorrow. Said you've lost AAF action. I'm Danny Parkins, and I don't have enough airtime. They cut my radio show in Chicago down to a mere 20 hours a week.
Simulcast my gambling thoughts.
There you have it.
We'll do a Game of Thrones preview for you. Yeah, it's possible. How about this voice of reason in the AAF? Johnny Manziel on Twitter. If you're an AAF player and the league does dissolve, the last check you got will be the last one that you get. No lawsuit or anything else will get you your bread. So save your money and keep your head up. It's the only choice at this point unless something drastic happens.
You got to get up pretty early in the day to get one by Johnny Football, don't you?
If the league folds, the last check you got is going to be the last one you get.
The last check you got is going to be the last check you got.
Yeah.
I think. I'm Johnny Manziel.
I think he's right. I get the same thing, Johnny.
That
Football.
Is, you know what, on a serious note, a lot of jobs have been lost today, and that's never fun. Broadcasters, people who work at stadia, concessionaires, vendors, a lot of people are affected by this.
Of course.
Not happy news.
Well, you know who's going to go down as the greatest coach in AAF history?
Coach can't do it?
Steve Spurrier leading that Orlando squad, 7 wins in his career. Steve Spurrier going out on top.
So well, good thing it ended. He can get to the golf course before he has to game plan for an 8th time. Coach sticks.
Do we get a 30 for 30 on the 7 weeks of the AAF?
I don't think it lasts long enough. Like the XFL got to a championship game, and Tommy Maddox ended up being a Steeler for a number of years, so he got that. Like, he didn't even get to a title game. I don't think so.
Okay, well,
he gets a 30 for 30 short. We can do that.
A short, okay.
10 to 12 minutes, yeah.
The XFL, Vince McMahon sold $250 million worth of WWE shares to fund the football league that he's launching next year. So now they have no competition for alternative football. So the XFL is next up on the docket, Mac, of alternative football leagues.
Okay. Shep, blowing a call to Coach Golf Clubs, Steve Spurrier, and see now that he has some idle time.
Do you think their offices are open? Should I get a hold of the Orlando squad?
Do you think
their PR guy's worried about us today?
If you guys would like to talk to Steve Spurrier, I've only interviewed him twice. And he was a lot of fun both times. You want to talk to him about what he's going to do with his since baseball season's over?
It's
Cubs
not
can't
over.
Get anybody out, Stop. So the sky is falling on Cubs Nation and the Sox. It's a rebuild year anyway, so let's talk to Steve Spurrier.
Even if the Cubs were 4-0, I'd want to talk to Steve Spurrier.
Would you really?
Of course. The old ball coach?
Yeah.
Yeah, old Florida stories? Hell yeah.
I don't think what he did at Florida has been acknowledged enough for being just as impressive as it was, because the school really did not have a rich history. And tell me you went to school with somebody named Rich History, and I believe you.
Sure.
Probably in a government class, I'm thinking. Until he arrived, they had some success under a guy named Galen Hall, but not nearly the sustained level of success and year after year after year of being ranked every year and winning SEC titles all the time. Just a remarkable run at Gainesville.
Seems impossible to imagine, given how big of a deal high school football is in Florida, that you wouldn't have won for forever in Florida.
Florida State always won that in Miami, too. You had both of those.
Sure, a lot of
competition. You had schools nationally who are competing for those kids, too. But, yeah, you're right. It did take a long time for them to get in the national championship picture.
We are McNeil and Parkins. Got some fun audio for you coming up at 4 o'clock for some On This Day stuff on The Score. Join The Score at 1-2 Prue on East Randolph for a special back-to-baseball live broadcast with Mully and Haw from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m., Bernstein and McKnight until noon, Lawrence Holmes until 2, and McNeil and Parkins until Cubs pregame at 5:45. Enjoy a day of baseball talk with your favorite show, special guests, and fun activities. It's all presented by Redemption Rye Whiskey. Rye is back, and so is baseball. Get your Redemption Rye Whiskey or Bourbon today. Also, Sweetwater Tavern and Grill, newly remodeled and reopened on the Mag Mile. So, it is the man who's better at his job than anyone else around here, Chris Tannehill's birthday today. And you know him for his opens at 2 and 5 o'clock, his montages, his unbelievable talents, and that he's the good White Sox fan on the show.
Yes, there's only one on this show.
Good one, anyway. That's exactly right. He has many legacies, but maybe his single biggest legacy. Today is his 36th birthday. We hope he lives to his 83rd for his 83-year-old birthday. And far beyond is that of 83 Nation, Chris Tannehill. And if he is the president, chairman, and all of that.
83.
Yes, of 83 Nation.
83.
There is a member of the local media who is probably his biggest fan. And so we wanted to bring him on for his birthday. From NBC Sports Chicago, Luke Stuckmeyer, you are on with your president, Chris Tannehill. Thank you, Luke.
I just want to wish him happy birthday. I mean, in my life, there's Clark from Des Plaines. There's Chris Tannehill, and then there's the rest of us.
You know, wow.
It's a very elite group. So happy birthday. And I came up with 3 beer money questions for him.
Oh, no.
If he wants to try and answer 3 beer money questions, we'll give him a prize.
All right. Go easy on me, Luke. All right. How you doing?
All right. First question. What year did the White Sox embrace the slogan, winning ugly?
Ooh, Ron Kittle. I'm guessing
83.
83 is correct.
I knew these are going to be
for
tough.
$20. I assume you're going to keep going for $20.
Yeah, Max.
What former White Sox player started his career with the Rockies, finished with the Indians, and totaled 199 home runs in 16 baseball seasons.
1983. I know who it is.
Juan Uribe.
Yes, Juan Uribe.
He's going to answer all of these in a soundbite. That's so appropriate.
Right. We're going to your $100 question, which I'm not giving you $100, but it's a $100 question.
Don't worry, Mac is. It's fine.
Okay. Mike Ditka's second season as head coach, the Bears finished 8-8 and in third place. What year was it?
Get your mouth shut. 83.
Yeah.
There it is. There it is. Beer money champion.
Happy
on his birthday.
Thank you, Lou. Nice.
If I could have Clark sing for you, I would. By the way,
yeah. Did we ever
Tannehill,
find him?
Really, no, never found him. But if Tannehill wants to actually play next Thursday, DeKalb Fatties, 5 o'clock, we start shooting the 20th season of Beer Money.
20?
20 seasons.
You're kidding. Has it been 20 already?
Yeah, 20. Well, it's not 20 years, but it's 20 seasons.
Okay.
For years, I think we started it in 2008.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right.
20 seasons. It's crazy. It's a couple a year.
Especially after the cliffhanger episode last season where we didn't know if Kelly Kroll passed away or not. Is she going to come back? Oh, don't spoil it for me.
Yeah,
it was all just a dream.
You'll have to wait and see. 20 seasons. I know, hard to believe. Started as gas money. Now it's beer money.
Yeah, if they let me out of here, I'll be out there. If they let me go early. Yeah. I'm working usually.
You can get out of work.
Do a remote.
We should do a remote.
We've been trying to make that happen for a long time. It would only be right for the Score to do a remote with the the beer money people.
That'd be a lot of fun. Happy birthday, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Luke, thanks for checking in. That's very cool.
Thank you, Luke.
Sure, guy. No problem.
All right. That's Luke Stuckmeyer from NBC Sports Chicago for our guy, Chris Tannehill.
Second in command at 83 Nation.
That's
is that
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
First lieutenant in Tanny's army.
That's the first time I ever spoke to Luke.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Well, there you go, buddy. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, that's through the TV. I tried talking to him through my TV, but it doesn't work.
It's a one-way conversation.
Happy. Go ahead and play it for yourself.
Hit it for yourself if you can. It's the big 3-6 for our leader, Chris Tannehill.
Happy.
Oh, no.
Song is interrupted.
That's too bad. Shares a birthday with John Lieber.
John with no H, Lieber, yes.
And Bill Romanowski.
Yeah, John Lieber out of Council Bluffs, Iowa, was on the bump at the 0-1 Major League Baseball All-Star Game, the Ichiro All-Star Game at Safeco Field, Cal Ripken's final performance. And that was the memorable Tommy Lasorda falling on his ass in that All-Star game. Which White Sox player went yard off John Lieber in that All-Star game, Danny Parkins? Come on, humor me.
Paul Konerko.
No, it wasn't Konerko, but that's a pretty good guess.
I believe Wilson Contreras is not a fan of this man.
I don't know that to be true, but I'll take your word for it.
Oh, yeah.
Now I know. Yeah, Ozzy's not a fan either.
A lot of people not a fan. Oh,
Maglio. I was going to get there after that.
Maglio
Ordonez.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Chef.
Maglio.
And then Bill Romanowski. I'm kind of surprised he's still alive.
Do the Cubs have
really?
The two best pitchers named John that are missing the H?
Lieber and Lester?
Lieber and Lester. Is there a better? Is there one nearly
John
as
Garland?
Good?
Garland.
Yeah,
not
he didn't,
as good as Lieber
he didn't
or Lester.
Need an H. I appreciate all of them.
He was a Cubs draft pick, too. So, I mean, yeah. Theoretically, technically counts.
Yeah. Did John Matlack have an H?
Yeah.
See if Rappaport's still down the hallway. See if Rapp's still around. We can get those Johns who pitched in the 30s.
How can you count different seasons of a show in the same 20 seasons of Beer Money, but it started in 2008?
Yeah, that's not quite fair.
Don't they usually do like a baseball one? They're either at Wrigley or they're at Guaranteed Rate, and it airs all baseball season. Then they do the ones that's filler for Bulls and Hawks.
I don't know. 20 seasons.
I mean,
it seems like just yesterday when they had the episode where the Maytag repairman took him in the back of his bike store. It seems like it was just yesterday.
A legendary show.
I watched that show. I can't pull myself away from it when it's on. I mean, I don't know if I watch it start to finish, but I find it to be more compelling than a lot of the other stuff they have on NBC Sports, not like out-of-town coaches shows.
The genius of that show is that since that channel is on in so many bars and
correct
gyms across the country or the city with no volume, you can watch that show with no volume.
Yeah.
That's the genius of that show.
It is. Back to Bill Romanowski. Why did you think he'd be dead?
Steroids, playing football, being a crazy person.
Yeah.
He just struck me as a prime early
kind
death
of guy who
candidate
wind up getting just shot somewhere because he's in an
hard
argument.
Concussions, CTE. Well,
he's got to stay alive long enough to share his opinions about people. I think he's one of those guys that always is weighing in on someone, especially, you know, NFL players like, oh, in my day it was like this and this guy's like this.
Yeah,
know?
And he has he did a supplement company that he's always hawking at Radio Row in the Super Bowl, like a this will save your life and reverse all aging trends and problems with your brain. I'm like, it just can't be healthy.
He was a nasty SOB.
Yes, he was. 10 years ago today, the Bears trade for Jay Cutler. So coming up next, we've got 10 minutes of the score from that day, including Dan and Terry's initial reaction, Hub is the wet blanket, and Mully who broke the story. Some of the names that you hear in this, it's just a time capsule of the NFL. It's coming up on the score.